5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the Sensible Football Podcast, where we are cancelling our open top bus parade because it's raining in Bangalore. This is Tariq joining you from that very rainy Bangalore, along with Vishal, who's also right there.
Hey guys.
And not sure if it is rainy London at the moment, but nonetheless, we have our European slash Serie A slash now England correspondent. That's Karan.
Well, it's actually raining today.
So we are united by the rain at the moment, but we are down to the last of the regular season pods. I think we have one more episode to go in this season, and that will be the episode which will mostly be me and Vishal talking about Inter winning the Champions League against PSG. Karan voluntarily staying out of it. Gentlemen, let's get into the Premier League, of course, which is our main beat. But before we go there, what is Karan's main beat? That is the Serie A. And last week, Karan, we were discussing the absolute mayhem that was going all across Serie A, and some of the ripples were being felt in Serie B and Serie C also. Just tell us how it unfolded. Napoli, of course, spectacular win, and that sealing another Scudetto for them. Somebody commented saying that Scott McTominay probably is the greatest ever to have played foreign player to have played for Napoli, and then somebody replied that, have you checked the name of the stadium they play?
So, no, but he was absolutely magnificent this season. I mean, got handed to him. I mean, definitely not Maradona level. I mean, let's not get too carried away, but still.
So, Karan, just take us through that final day quickly in terms of how Napoli, who of course had the fate in their own hands, managed to squeeze out that win. And of course, like you said, in a very poetic moment, the go ahead goal came from Scott McTominay himself, who might end up having to take the manager's role as well, because in classic Serie A fashion, Napoli have lost their manager. So, Karan, over to you to quickly give our listeners a quick rundown on the Serie A champions.
Well, when it comes to the championship, let's just say if I had to choose between Sauron and Saruman, Saruman ended up winning, so I'm at least relatively to the lesser of the two evils. But I think overall, I think it was a well-deserved title for them. They managed to kind of see off a late charge from Inter. But all in all, I think across 38 games, they were by far the best, most consistent team. And like you said, in typical Serie A chaos fashion, literally, like, it was even before the game started, it was clear that Conte was leaving. So let's just put it that way. And I think somebody was discussing this on Twitter that, you know, in the post-game celebration, Conte and the chairman, Aurelio Llorientes, they couldn't even meet each other. They couldn't even see each other eye to eye. That's the amount of animosity between them at this point in time, which is not uncommon because this happens with every Napoli manager, every single one since Llorientes has taken over.
That's fair, but one thing is Llorientes has brought success to the club and Conte has burnt every bridge that he's been on. So I think both of them have played a role in this.
Of course.
Conte's level of bridge burning makes him the second biggest destructor of infrastructure after, I guess, the Bombay Municipal Corporation.
Well, the talk is now he's going to head back to his roots, so let's see how that works out. There's not much to burn left, not much left to burn there, let me tell you.
So we shall, of course, be following all of that next season as well. The classic mayhem that is the Serie A. But let's come back to the Premier League, where of course Liverpool were crowned champions. I mean, it was a mere formality, but the trophy handover with the crowd in the stadium, which is kind of a once in a 35-year spectacle if you are a Liverpool fan. And we are recording this on the day that, in fact, almost at the very time that the parade is happening in Liverpool, which has been spectacular as well, and which is again what you would expect, given that the last title was during COVID and there was no parade as such, and the last parade was more for a smaller trophy than the Premier League. So the town has turned up, but the top of the table has been discussed enough. The bottom of the table also has been discussed enough. So we wanted to take a look at the middle of the table, often ignored, or one could look at them and say not very consequential in terms of positions. Maybe not everybody getting into European football, although this season it feels like everybody is getting into European football from the Premier League.
Almost,
There
almost.
was a great graphic on BBC Sport. Which had the Premier League points table, and they have a key at the bottom which says, you know, positions whatever to whatever, Champions League positions this to this, Europa League, and positions 18 to 20 relegated. So currently that graphic says positions 1 to 17 UEFA Champions League without clarifying.
I mean, which means Man United made it as well, right?
No. We are the exception to that rule.
But nonetheless, there were three teams, coincidentally all beginning with B's. That would be Brentford, that would be Bournemouth, and that would be Brighton and Hove Albion. Three teams who are not your template of a global mega club. Neither are they exactly very small or, you know, perfect fairy tale stories, but in their own way, they're pretty remarkable, all three. So, gentlemen, let's talk about these three teams, which finished on positions 8, 9, and 10, positions that nobody pays a lot of attention to, like I was saying. But, you know, again, from a soccer sense point of view, we kind of look at things which go beyond the field and thinking of what these clubs mean to the fan bases that they have. And again, they're not exactly tearing. So there's a great story about Bournemouth. I think when the new owner took over, I think back when they were at the brink of bankruptcy, so they wanted to offer I think a free ticket and some prize to anybody who showed up wearing a Bournemouth jersey. And they sat in that town, and it's a very small town. It's a population of what, almost 200,000 people or so. And they thought, well, this is going to be a short day. So the marketing team were sitting on the street, and they had to sit through the entire day until the evening when somebody showed up wearing a Bournemouth shirt that they actually could give the prize to. So that's how small the fan base was at one point. Karan, tell us a little bit about Bournemouth because you have been there as well.
Yeah, it's a small town just outside of London. In fact, I have a cousin of mine who stays there with her family just outside of Bournemouth in a small town called Poole. So my nephew is actually a Bournemouth fan, and he was actually extremely excited with the way Bournemouth were playing going earlier in the season. And of course, he was in the end, you know, he did have hopes that maybe they could finish a bit higher. But at the end of the day, I think it was still a great performance by them. I still remember that my last visit from. Where from after visiting them the last time, it was during the FA Cup tie with Man City. As I got onto the train, I was following the score. I believe Bournemouth were leading, and by the time I reached London, unfortunately, they had lost. So I could literally sense the disappointment in my at my cousin's place that day. But I think it's one of those clubs similar to the others that you mentioned and a couple of others in the Premier League, which in many ways they kind of fly under the radar. It's not the biggest stadium. In fact, I think in terms of capacity, it is the smallest one in the Premier League, if I'm not mistaken, as we were discussing before the pod. It's around, I think, 15,000 to 18,000 capacity. And if I had to compare, driving up to the stadium as well, it's almost like, in Indiranagar, if we were driving down 80 feet road, took a left turn on 6th Main, and we find D Field, right? Suddenly, out of the blue, that is literally how, you could say a Bournemouth looks like in terms of, the entire area.
My unreserved apologies to listeners who are from outside of Bangalore and specifically this
Very
niche
strongly.
area
Six
with
cross
current
Indiranagar D
difference.
fields.
It's literally like that. It's literally like it's unassuming that way. But
There
I
goes
think
our hopes of being a global podcaster. We tend to Indiranagar sixth cross.
it's pretty much that's how it is. It's kind of like like anyways. But getting back, I think similar to Bournemouth, I think Brighton, Brentford, all of them, right? I think they've done a brilliant job. Not just this season, but over the course of, I think, 5, 6 years, wherein, they've maintained a level of consistency in their books as well as in their performances. Yes, there have been occasions where, they've gone down and they've been able to kind of, find themselves back up, which not a lot of teams are actually able to do.
And speaking of maintaining their position or maintaining their the winning level or at least competitiveness in the Premier League, I think Bournemouth have ended up with the highest number of points they have ever accumulated here in the Premier League this season, which is 56. Talk us through, Vishal, about how these teams have been able to also nurture talent. I mean, you talk about Brighton, Albion, everybody talks about their recruitment. In fact, it's pretty legendary in terms of how they're able to find players, and that's how they have been maintaining their position. Another team that was at the brink of potential bankruptcy, rescued at the last moment, had to actually sell off their original ground to I think land developers to pay off their debts back in the 1990s. And this is the story of some of these clubs, which in the older English first division, second division system, probably were able to kind of stay afloat. But the moment the Premier League came in and the moment the dynamics changed a little, they did struggle. And we'll come back to Karan on this one a little later. But quick word on the personnel, because obviously you have to play football on the field, and you need good players to play good football on the field to be consistent this year.
Absolutely. I think what they've cracked is a business model for all practical purposes, right? Because I think what they've realized is between this position 7 to 10 is a sweet spot because it's a healthy amount of money for staying in the league and more importantly finishing in those positions, which allows them to consolidate. And if you look at somebody like Brighton, they've done it over what 7, 8 years now, right? And that basically means 7, 8 years of consistent flow of money. That means 7, 8 years of consistent flow of broadcast rights. That also means allowing them to reinvest money with the confidence that some of this money is going to come back at the end of the season, right? And therefore allowing them to build a much larger and smarter scouting network, allowing them to bring these players in, which they know for a fact that are not going to be ending their careers in Brighton, right? So how do they invest almost minimal money on these players and sell them out for much larger payoffs? And let's also not forget the fact that clubs like Brighton and Bournemouth have also found some of the top managers in the country, right? And every time these managers choose other clubs over Brighton or Bournemouth, they make money on that front as well. So at the base of it, I think it's become an excellent business model where they found what their sweet spot is and have focused on consistency instead of one large home run, right? Because it as romantic as Leicester winning the title was, it's just as tragic as to see them go back go down to twice in 4 years. So therefore, this is a far bigger achievement if you ask me, as compared to one title and two relegations.
Yeah, which brings me back again. So Karan, if you could talk about the financial model here a bit, and we were discussing this before we started the pod, which was essentially the fact that clubs like, for example, a Luton Town, which could also be looked at as a fairy tale in terms of coming to the Premier League, but then and at that point of time, I think theirs was the smallest capacity stadium to be present in the Premier League. The one that famously you have to go through somebody's house to get to. So, like you pointed out, they have gone down from the Premier League, and I think now they have been relegated from the Championship as well. So, talk us a little bit through the finance lens of what is going on.
I think two things. One, I think the point that you made earlier in terms of, when the Premier League was first formed, right? What happened? Basically, in that situation, what happened was it kind of indirectly created sort of like a class society within English football in many ways, where you had the haves and the have-nots, right? So you had the clubs who were big enough to actually, to qualify to be in the Premier League, and then you had basically the rest, right? So a lot of these clubs were ended up being as part of the rest, and it was always going to be an uphill task from that point of view, from that point on, for them to kind of, reach the heights of the Premier League. Now, the one mistake that a lot of clubs do in the Championship is they kind of, yes, they aim to kind of make it to the Premier League, which every club, to be fair, that has to be their goal in the Championship. But once they reach there, it's almost like as if they treat it like that is in itself the Holy Grail, and that is the achievement. But in many ways, the way you think about it is that is basically the start of it. Now, once you reach there, all of them just go completely bonkers, and they start spending big into player increasing player wages, trying to retain some of their players and trying to sign players to kind of, keep them in the Premier League. And they kind of ignore what they had already done to reach that level. So a lot of them kind of move away from all the good things that they've been doing, which I don't think these clubs that we're talking about today have not done to that extent, right? So they've maintained, like Vishal was saying, they've maintained a certain level of consistency in performance, not just on the field, but off the field as well. The biggest challenge is a lot of times clubs, once they go down back into the Championship, right? It's very difficult. A lot of clubs, they don't, it takes a long time, or sometimes it never even happens for them that they're able to kind of, find themselves back in the Premier League, because they overextended financially to stay in the Premier League. Do we remember this club called Charlton Athletic, who used to be there when we first started watching the Premier League? Ever since they got relegated, I don't think they've ever come back up, right? So there have been many clubs like that. When I first started watching football in the early 2000s, there have been clubs who got relegated who I don't think are even in the Championship anymore. So a lot of these clubs, but what these clubs have done, like Brighton, like Bournemouth, right? Though they did get relegated in the past, they managed to find themselves back in the Premier League simply because they were able to maintain that safety net. And most importantly, they did not overextend their resources.
Yeah, which is probably a good place to bring in somebody like a Brentford, who again, London-based club, relatively small venue, relatively small team. Famously, one of my most favorite, you could say, anti-Liverpool slogans was at a game where Liverpool were losing to Bournemouth, Brentford, and the fans were singing, "We are just a bus stop in Hounslow." Which again,
Well, to be fair, they don't stay.
reference.
They're pretty close from where I stay, but let me say they're more than just a bus stop.
Even that has been a club which has kind of looked at sustainable spending, has one of the most diverse boards out there, does a lot of work in the community, but again, has the tactical and the football chops to be actually competing in the Premier League throughout the season. In fact,
I
I
think,
think Bournemouth this year were challenging for European spots at one point of time.
I think that point that you make is very, very valid. It's a community, right? A lot of these clubs, especially in the middle of the table, they literally look at themselves as part of a community. And even from the fan base, right? They don't have delusions of grandeur. They don't expect their team to be, Premier League champions or European champions, 10 years down the line, 12 years down the line. They are happy because they treat it as a Sunday pastime. Well, not, I wouldn't say it, more than just a pastime, but sort of like a Sunday ritual or a Saturday ritual for them, right? It's so it, and it's part of their weekly schedule wherein they go, they follow their club, and that's about it, right? And so they don't have that extra pressure from their fan base as well that they need to kind of, be challenging the big boys, right? I mean, it's always good to have that little a deep cup run or maybe finishing in the European spots, but that's never an expectation from the fan base as well.
Yeah, so which brings me back to Vishal. And Vishal, since you are the tactical breakdown expert on Soccer Sense, let's talk about Bournemouth this season. Actually, they've had a very interesting set of tactics, where rather than trying to keep control of the proceedings, like let's say Manchester City would with a lot of possession and position, they have kind of Bournemouth, I think, have the highest number of turnovers in the Premier League. They lose the ball the most times, but somehow they are, as a BBC article put it, embracing the chaos.
Absolutely. See, I think Bournemouth have been very clear from the word go, right? You can say what you want. You can, this thing, we might lose the ball as many times as we want, but we insist on playing a style of football and a particular brand of football, right? And which is very fair because more often than not, what you find is clubs lacking identity, right? And look at some of the top clubs in the country right now, be it somebody as obvious as a Manchester United or somebody as obvious as a Tottenham Hotspurs. Again, like both of them have no brand of football, have all the brand in the world, but have no brand of football, suddenly lack identity. So for somebody like a Bournemouth who are okay with the fact that we might lose the ball 100 times, but every time we have the ball, we're looking to make some impact, looking to play a particular style of football, I think that takes guts to do, and more importantly, that also allows you to recruit very, very clearly. It allows you to clearly identify what the skill set you're looking for. It allows you to identify what players you need and therefore recruit correctly. And they're not taking a guess anymore, right? Because they know very clearly what they want. And that's the advantage and the benefits of clarity.
And of course, to kind of wrap this entire thing up, I come back to Karan's point about community, because I think on this very podcast, we had talked to somebody from Brighton's marketing department when they had visited here just the season after, or the very season when they had just gotten promoted to the Premier League. And I think there was a Premier League event in India where some of the other big clubs had come. So there was a Chelsea, there was a Liverpool, there was a Manchester United, even a Manchester City as well. There was Brighton among them. So I had gone and asked, I think Mark, about why Brighton were here, what kind of outreach were they trying to do, and what kind of story they were trying to tell. And he kind of mentioned about the community aspect of what happened when the new arena was built, which was the American Express Stadium, the Amex as they call it now. And American Express was not just showing corporate largesse in terms of just coming and pouring money and building a stadium, but he said that they were also looking at it in terms of paying dividend over the long run, not just for Brighton in terms of, let's say, upgraded infrastructure and a spectacular new stadium and training facilities, which obviously helped in terms of improving their performance and their competitiveness, but also for Brighton as a place to attract more students, international, including international students at the University of Brighton and other educational institutions that they had. And of course, that those students would be a great talent pool to recruit from, because American Express also has a service center, or what nowadays are called capability centers. Back in our day, we used to be called call centers. So hiring people for those. So there is obviously a tangible impact on the community as well, which is welded into the well-being of these clubs, that, like Karan said, that if it's part of the it's a part of the fabric of their daily lives, that it's not just about trophy counts and things like that, or the transfer budget and television ratings at the end of the day. It's also the fact that they have a ritual to hold on.
In fact, just adding to your point, JP Morgan actually have one of their biggest offices very close in Bournemouth, or close to Bournemouth.
Yeah, so it's probably a hot spot for trying to get attract talent. And of course, both Bournemouth and Brighton happen to be on the south coast of England. So one could be tempted to say that something in the water in the south coast that is making these clubs, but then you are reminded that there is also Southampton. But we shall see. Again, Southampton is a classic case of did come to the Premier League, but then they were not quite sure what they wanted to do, and it was very clear very early on that they would be one of the clubs to go down indeed. But at the end of the day, I think end of the season, you look back at it, and you could have your open top bus parades, and of course the count of who's on the perch and who's not. But eventually, if you strip everything else away from the club, and if you were to put a philosophical question that what if all the trophies and everything else was taken away, and what would survive in terms of the identity and in terms of it being a receptacle for history, personal experience, and everything else, I think you could look at clubs like these to kind of get a sense of why community in football is such an important thing. And no matter how global the game becomes, and no matter how big a global brand the clubs become, eventually the localized community and the impact they have there will probably have a role to play. I mean, no other bigger example, Karan, and I'm sorry to bring this up again, than probably Napoli.
It's fine. It's fine. It's a lesser of two evils.
Because again, like Napoli, back when they won under Maradona, Vishal, I think you and I discussed about this, and I mentioned because I had gone and seen the Maradona documentary that somebody had the after Napoli won after all those years back in, I think it was 87, somebody went to the graveyard and graffitied on the walls there, saying that you guys don't know what you missed, or something on those lines. So kind of
I
tells
think it was
you,
something like you should have been there or something like that, if I
yeah,
remember that. Yeah.
it was kind of that. So it kind of shows you how spectacularly and how big a part of the fabric of society these are. And of course, that's the one thing that we kind of talk about on Soccer Sense often, because it is easy to kind of get carried away with everything else that is happening in football. But as long as somehow some bit of soul is preserved in football through this or clubs like these, probably a better game to watch. Okay, gentlemen, so that brings us to the end of this episode. We shall of course be back with one final closer episode, like we said, after the big one, the Champions League final, is over. Whether or not that we'll have the full panel is debatable, but we hope we hope Karan is also part of it. So meanwhile, this is Tariq signing off along with Karan.
See you guys. Go, come on, PSG.
And
The only time I'm ever going to say that.
Vishal.
See you.